right, and here we are. This is the Working Title Show with Zach Sams, and we are back. All right, we are back. This is the Working Title Show with Zach Sams, and was the second recording of 2026, or is this the third recording? I think it's second recording.
Second recording.
We are, it's February.
I know.
Can you believe it's freaking February?
No.
I can't. It's crazy. Anyways, but we're glad to be back. We got a great show and a great guest today. I'm very excited to hear about our guest and what he's doing. It's Chris Putnam, CEO. Is that pronounced that right, Putnam?
Yeah, Putnam.
Putnam.
Yep.
I never get the names right.
everybody misses it.
I have the letters almost right. Yeah. Sometimes I just invent names.
We're batting 1,000 on that.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. Yeah. So Chris Putnam with the Dallas Express, CEO of the Dallas Express, which I'm really excited to have you on because I was telling you downstairs that I've been reading the Dallas Express for a couple years ever since I joined the MCBA, and man, it's a lot of fun. It's a fun newspaper to read. Do we call it a newspaper or
some people still do. I call it an outlet, but we still have this subtitle, the People's Paper. So
yeah,
you know, people still refer to digital outlets as newspapers.
Well, I want you to tell us about the Dallas Express and give us some history. But first, let's talk about you and how you got to the Dallas Express. Because I'm reading I was looking at your bio here, and it doesn't sound like you were. When you start reading it, I didn't expect it to end at a news site.
Yeah.
But it says here that what I really want to know is what is the Global Golden Circle Award? Every bio I've read on you, that this is mentioned from IBM.
Yeah, so I started my career at IBM, and I was on the sales side. And okay. It's an award they give to the top 1% of global revenue producers for that particular year.
Well, that sounds like a good award.
It's one of the more prestigious awards, the most prestigious award on the sales side of the business.
So were you selling software for IBM?
I sold everything. So yeah. I was assigned to the telecom industry, spent my entire career in the telecom industry and software and services.
Okay. Wow. Awesome. And how long were you there?
I was only at IBM about 3 years.
3 years, and you got the global.
It was a weird situation. A lot of folks, you know, wait their whole careers to get something like that, and you know, I just took to it, you know, very early on, and kind of had
a
stint and knack for it. And
was there like a big account that you just stumbled into in a bar at the
No, I wish it worked that way. And I had a number of big accounts. Bell South at the time was probably the biggest. Of course, that's all changed now.
Yeah.
And I really kind of what made my career was I was kind of, you know, learning the ropes right at the time of the deregulation of the telecom industry. And that's when all the competitive exchange carriers were coming out and everything changed, right? I mean, we got rid of long distance companies and people started plowing fiber in the ground. And because I was younger, I knew that industry.
Yeah.
And I eventually went to Perot Systems from IBM. Purposely, I always wanted to work for the pros and Ross Senior in particular, for a lot of reasons, but foremost because he was basically the father of the IT outsourcing industry.
Right.
And I just admired him personally. And so, same kind of situation. I was pretty young. Most of the guys I worked with were a good 10, 20 years older there. And, you know, he spent about 5 years there and was fortunate enough to get to work with both Ross Senior and then Ross Junior in his time as the CEO there.
Wow, that's really cool. Me and Tyler, actually it was Tyler, he got me on their golf course, the Circle 9 over at the
Circle T9.
At the Circle T.
Yeah. What's funny about that is I remember, of course, when, you know, it was still a ranch.
Yeah.
And we'd go out there to do special training conferences and things like that. I have some funny Ross Perot stories from there. Not making fun of the man.
No, sure.
He's just, you know, he's kind of a character in his own way. I remember, it's so crazy what's happened out there in Wesley and that property in particular.
I believe it. I believe that he'd be kind of a character. We went into his office there on
the museum.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surrounded by
lions.
Yeah.
And I think there was like a rhino or something behind the thing. And they're like, oh yeah, that rhino like horned his son. And I was like, oh my God.
It has an original copy of the Magna Carta.
Yeah.
And then the same guy who sold him the first was like, well, I came across another one and he bought that one too.
He's quite a collector.
It's crazy.
He's got like a first century shekel and what was the Winston Churchill's tea set? And out there at that ranch, there's a cage of pink, like extremely endangered pink Himalayan doves. Dove,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they got all the doves. And you're sitting at dinner and these doves are cooing in the back. It's just a cool spot.
Well, it's just really a, you know, they're, of course, seniors left us, but like, super patriot.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Gave so much back that people don't even know about. And I haven't seen or worked with Rossberg Jr. in a long time, but same thing.
Yeah.
You know, he just gives a lot back. And, of course, I'm from Fort Worth originally, and so, you know, I got to watch a lot of the growth of Alliance and how important that's been to, you know, that community.
Well, yeah, I mean, what he did in the IT world is amazing, but what he's done in the real estate world is, I mean, talk about foresight and sports world, but foresight for the Alliance corridor.
Yeah.
You know, to start that 40 years ago and to see what it's become is just absolutely.
Yeah, all the growth over in Tarrant County, of course, is that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's all north and west.
Well, it's all the way up to Argyle now,
yeah.
Which is why we're thinking about moving to Oklahoma.
Yeah, right.
You going to go be a Sooner?
Yeah. Chris, talk a little bit about, like, are we a two newspaper town again?
We absolutely are. You know, so we're, you know, exclusively a digital outlet. Print, I think most people know, is a dying medium. Star Telegram's down to print in 3 days a week. It's expensive.
Yep.
And the ad revenue isn't what it used to be. You know, our readership is empirically, we have the data, more than the Dallas Morning News. We have 500,000 subscribers. That's a little bit of a cheat because we're free. We don't have a paywall.
Right.
Now, Uncle Belos doesn't give things away for free.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel bad because Dallas is sitting here next to me. You know, he writes a great column for the Dallas Morning News. One that I read frequently.
And your last column is really good.
Yeah.
I wrote about hockey, of all things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that, you know, they were recently sold to Hearst Media in New York City. So they're not Texas owned anymore. And they, at the time that they were sold, I think the last quarter they lost $30 million. And so, you know, our readership exceeds theirs. We spend a lot less money. And have national distribution through Yahoo. I have White House press credentials.
That's recent that y'all got those, right?
Yeah, Q4 of last year, yeah.
That's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah.
Let's back up a little bit because the Dallas Express actually has a pretty cool history. It's actually been around for a very long time.
5 years?
Well, I thought it went way back before that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was a Dallas Express that was a...
Wasn't it like the historically black newspaper?
Yeah, it was like the largest black publication in the entire Southwest, I believe.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you what our publisher's decision for leveraging that brand was, you know, other than it probably had some historical brand equity.
Well, I assume that it, like a lot of newspapers, was failing and Monty bought the name or the rights.
I think it was long gone.
Okay.
You know, decades gone, maybe.
So did he buy the rights or did he just kind of reincarnate it, sort of?
I actually don't know. So if there was some brand equity there, I really don't know. It precedes me.
We'll have to follow up on that. So so when you left Perot's, you had a startup.
Yeah, a company called Synchronous Technologies. I was in a group of guys, a lot of them were New Jersey based, that were also in the same industry. So we saw each other a lot. And at some point I just, you know, I wanted to take a chance on doing a startup. And we took a Series A round of funding in, I think it was about 2004. By 2006, we IPO'd, so it was relatively quickly. Tried to give as much of that money back as we could. So, you know, we were hostages of venture capital community. And the really exciting story there was we IPO'd at about $9 a share in the middle of 2006. But our softwares and processes were embedded as part of the first iPhone. Because we were doing AT&T.com's, all their complex ordering, order management, workflow management. Connective tissue, you know, between basically your device and the network. And Apple, Steve Jobs wanted just a completely different user experience, you know, you probably remember it still is. You go in, you buy a phone, you leave, tether it to iTunes, self-configures, right?
Right.
So our software did a lot of that because we were in the early days of online ordering. And so we went from $9 to $42 a share in about like 6 months.
Holy.
And that ended up being the largest consumer device launch in history. We were a very intimate partner with both. You'll recall also AT&T had the exclusive. So they were the only carrier that had the iPhone, yep. You know, for the first couple of years.
You move quick. 3 years to get the Global Circle Award. 5 years at Pro, and then just a few years, $1 billion market.
It was
cap.
Pretty wild.
That's exciting.
And then ran it as a public company for 12 years. And none of us that started that business had ever had executive management experience managing a public company as executive officers.
Don't let anybody tell you that the American dream is dead. That is
no. We went from zero to a $2 billion market cap inside 10 years.
Wow,
that's exactly where the working title show is going, right?
Yeah.
So how do you go from there to the Dallas
I actually went
Express?
From there to the ski slopes. I retired for 6 years.
Good for you.
Yeah, a place in Colorado, and I was traveling globally. I was in basically every boardroom of every major telecom company you've ever heard of in the world. And, you know, that's fun.
Consulting
but,
and stuff or?
Selling our products and managing the account relationships, customer right. relationships. And, and so, you know, that's a lot of fun. It was, you know, you get to meet so many interesting people. And my thing is I never really treated like a tourist thing. Like I embedded, you know, with the people I did business with. And so you get the real local experience in a lot of those countries. But it's also, for most people who've traveled a lot for business, it's very taxing.
Yeah.
It takes years off your life. And so I'd finally kind of had enough, and, I was just like, yeah, I'm done for a while.
So you skied for a little while?
Yeah, and I didn't have any real, I wasn't looking to do anything else.
Yeah.
And our publisher, it's well-known, everybody in Dallas, is a very successful hotelier, Monty Bennett.
Yeah.
And he founded the Dallas Express just because he got frustrated with the Dallas Morning News and the Star-Telegram. He didn't think that they were, you know, reporting some things particularly related to the city of Dallas and issues that he cared about in Dallas accurately. And, you know, it was really kind of visionary, because when you kind of flash forward to where we are today, I mean, the media industry in general has made that full pivot,
yeah.
you know, from kind of the, particularly the legacy print dailies to digital and online. And, you know, it's fractionalized now as well. And so he saw that, and he was really kind of a pioneer in that respect. It didn't, you know, it was, they did a great job of starting it for people that literally had not been in professional media before.
Right.
But it really caught fire in the last 2 years. And, you know, some of that has to do with, I'd like to think some of it has to do with my leadership, but some of it also has to do with just the change in that dynamic.
Right.
I mean, we went from folks that were more right-leaning politically, or outlets that were more right-leaning politically, being shadow banned on outlets like Facebook and Twitter, and then that all changed, you know, when Elon bought X. And then, of course, as I think Zuckerberg and some of these other guys, you know, saw that...
Fell in line.
Saw that things were changing pretty dramatically. They loosened up considerably.
It's pretty crazy how fast all that stuff changed from...
It was really quick.
They not only loosened up, they quickly jumped on the side of the what they thought was the winning team at the time.
I thought it was fascinating just at the inauguration to see, you know, Zuckerberg sitting there with the president. And, I mean, you know, Zuckerberg very publicly acknowledged that the Biden administration pressured them on a lot of COVID-related stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's for him to do that. It's interesting, like, when I started January of 2024, they were spending money on various Facebook ads, booze, posts, et cetera. I'm like, we're done with this. Like, yeah. It's going to get us nowhere. We have, like, almost a million followers on that platform, but they couldn't even get ads to go through, right? And now they write us checks.
Like, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So when you took over Dallas Express, what was the goal or the initiative?
Well, I'll tell you the reason I started was, you know, again, you know, just to create an alternative back to what we were talking about before the show. Like, this used to be a two-paper town.
Yeah.
And that's healthy. It's healthy to have different perspectives. And, we fundamentally believe that, you know, what's happened in the media in the last 10 years in particular is it just went one way really hard. And in fact, last year, the public editor for the Dallas Morning News, he wrote a column acknowledging, you know, their left-wing bias. And our objective isn't to be a right-wing newspaper. We get labeled with that because the legacy media or the mainstream media just hates a new entrant.
Yep.
Right, particularly when it's being successful, and 90% of them aren't. I mean, that's just a fact. That's not politics. And so I looked at it, you know, strictly from a business point of view when I came in. And, you know, coming from where I come from and the people that I'm around, a lot of people were disenfranchised. You know, they felt disenfranchised, at least, you know, by the way that some of our larger local, you know, media outlets were covering certain things. And you can feel it. And people talked about it. You hear about people canceling subscriptions, and that's reflected in what's happened to both major local papers.
Yeah.
Star-Telegram is owned by a New Jersey hedge fund now, purchased out of bankruptcy from a California company. I mean, they're as far away from Amy Carter as, you know, you can get these days. There's nothing Texas about it. They actually had a a member of the Fort Worth editorial board, who is a permanent New York City resident, and the publisher's a California guy. So, there, and by the way, Hearst, who now owns Dallas Morning News, also owns Houston Chronicle, Austin Statesman, San Antonio Express, obviously no relation, and a number of other Texas outlets. Like, most Texas daily print outlets are not even owned by Texas companies.
It's interesting.
That's a travesty.
So,
a lot of people that are here aren't Texans either.
That's fair.
Dallas is.
But I think
Dallas
like you're missing a huge opportunity.
Oh, for sure.
Anybody you talk to is huge from here.
Well, again, from a business point of view, right? So I looked at it and I'm like, okay, so where are these disenfranchised? Where is this disenfranchised audience? You know what neighborhoods they are, right? I mean, Highland Park and in Fort Worth, West Fort Worth. You know, they're all over the metroplex, particularly in the suburbs. And that's where we targeted readership. And so that's where we targeted stories. That's where we targeted advertisers. And our thing is we do a lot of cultivating and, you know, developing good sources, good credible sources, particularly in a lot of the local government, state government, now even the federal government. And because of that, we get stories that the other outlets just aren't going to get.
I definitely notice that when I look at y'all's, and I think y'all have a great website app.
We have an app. Yeah, it's free as well.
It's real easy to just scroll through the stories. But I notice you'll have a lot of stories. You'll have a good national, you know, group of stories, but you'll have a lot of local stories that I'm not seeing. And I'm kind of a news junkie almost. It's almost too much. But
that's really the unique value proposition. Yeah, that's kind of our secret sauce.
And when you look around, you see the same stories in all these different outlets. But I notice in y'all have a lot of stories I'm not seeing picked up anywhere else. And they're local ones, and they're good stories, and they're interesting because I think people are interested in what's happening locally.
Oh, 100%.
A lot of
the stories that we investigate locally and then break, end up matriculating national. Like the biggest story we ever had was about the Republican congresswoman in Fort Worth who, wasn't in Congress for 7 months at the end of last year. And, we found her living full-time in a retirement facility. And she wasn't casting.
We had a congressman who was missing?
Congresswoman living in a retirement facility?
Yeah. So that story.
I missed that.
Elon picked it up. And then every major outlet in the world, not just in the country, in the world. And it was like Christmas week of 2024, it was every cable news show. And that for us was a big credibility boost. When people are saying, here's this right wing thing. And again, we're really not we're not trying to be the DFW Breitbart or Red State. There's plenty of that. We just want to be like the center right alternative, to what we perceive are these other far left outlets. And it's not even political because I always tell people our sacrosanct principle is truth.
Right. News shouldn't be political.
Well, and I think that sometimes too. I mean, I'm conservative and I'm a longtime reader of the morning news. I think that, if you look at the city of Dallas, Dewhurst is the last person to be elected to statewide office in Dallas County in 2010. And so there are a lot of people that are on the left that live in Dallas County. There are more of those.
60-40 in the city of Dallas.
Yeah. So, I wrote this recently when I had my 100th column come out that I leave the Park Cities and go downtown and I'm too conservative. And then when I come home, I'm not conservative enough.
That sounds right.
The regions changed in that, and I've talked about this for a long time. Dallas and Houston and Austin had largely seceded culturally from the state of Texas.
Houston actually is changed a little bit because
it's come back. So, strong mayor. It's a little different form of government too.
Yeah.
So, but
back to your two paper thing, right? That's why it's important, I think, because what happens is
Herald
get
was
insulated
always,
like that. Yeah. Then you're pandering to that audience.
Well, there was a period where when Schutz and Walensky and were at the Observer covered City Hall the best by far.
Yeah.
By far, they had the best coverage.
What's
City Hall.
The latest on the Observer? Are they still relevant at all, or? Not really.
Not to be, but
advertising the escorts and all that.
I don't really read it anymore.
They've done some good investigative stuff in the past. Some really good investigative stuff.
I mean, they really miss Jim. I mean, that was must read. His column every week. I think.
You're seeing. I mean, you mentioned all these groups that are buying these papers. These,
outside
of Texas or whatever,
or private equity firms.
They're buying. They obviously feel like there's something still there. Maybe they haven't figured out the secret sauce, but I mean, they're picking up these papers. So so it's actually, somebody feels like there is money to be made somewhere. They're just trying to figure out how to do it.
Or it's like, actually survivability. And if you guys finance guys, so like in the finance world, it'd be a harvest strategy, right? So with what they're doing, of course, is they acquire as many material or as many outlets at scale as they can get that are suffering financially, and then they consolidate, right? So they tear out all the SG&A, they tear out a lot of the reporting, then they share it across all those regions.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's one way. But
it's not about good news.
It's still about, it's to be clear, it's like it's still declining.
Right.
But they can maximize the profit and harvest it. It's a harvest model, basically, at the end of the day. The Star Telegram was bought by a private equity company expressly for that purpose. That they came in, they sold all the capital assets, the buildings, the printers, like the Dallas Morning News sold the printers, you know, right before their deal with Hearst, which I assume was, you know, part of that arrangement. But they eliminated all that. Then, you know, whatever profit is left, they're redirecting to their growth initiatives in their portfolio. And Star Telegram, a perfect example, I think in the 90s, they peaked out at like something like 300,000 plus subscribers. And in the Fort Worth Report, did an investigative story, I believe it was about a year ago, saying they're down to 27,000 paid subscribers. And they're only printing 3 days a week.
Oh, wow.
So wait, you said in the 90s, Star Telegram had 300,000 subscribers. And you have 500,000?
We have 500,000. We're free.
Right. Well, still, though, it's just eyeballs.
But, you know, readership is, but our readership empirically is way higher than the Star Telegram's.
Right.
And then the other thing is, you know, the folks that start digitally, not just us, but they're just more sophisticated, you know, with the use of social media. And I always tell people that, like, when you're talking about news or media these days, there's really two different businesses. There's, you know, there's your website business, and then there's the social business, and they're monetized very differently, and you have to approach them very differently. And so it's basically you're managing this kind of complex channels environment. And even within the social business, you know, X is different than Meta, which is different from LinkedIn, which is different from Nextdoor. You know,
so about like magazines and Texas Monthly and guys like that? Are they?
You know, I can't really tell you because that's not my market.
Yeah.
But like my understanding is they're not doing well either. Texas Monthly, I know financially is not doing well.
But it's a great publication.
Yeah, great publication. D Magazine, same thing. Yeah. Where like I used to love to just flip through a D Magazine or a
but
Texas.
But that's also
Monthly.
When there are fewer options.
Yeah. But I mean, I just. Something about.
Well, I was a newspaper reader myself. Like, yeah. I wanted the paper.
Yeah.
Like,
something
it took me a long
everything
time.
Everything being online, my eyeballs are hurting. So
I still like a paper.
I do too. I like a paper and I like a magazine.
So, who are your readers? Does. Like, what age are they? Do they skew more to Collin County? Maybe I have some assumptions that you'll tell me I'm wrong about.
No. Think of like maybe your more affluent, educated markets or areas within the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. And we have statewide readership. We even have national readership. I think I mentioned we have a national distribution deal with Yahoo News, so they carry us. But in this area, obviously, like Park Cities, you know.
But North that's also the Morning News best category.
North Dallas. Their principal reason people are still subscribe is sports. And right. that's what a lot of folks.
I read the sports page first.
Yeah. And so, and then, you know, of course, most of the Tarrant County suburbs, and even, you know, Fort Worth. It's everybody you can think of. There is a lot in Collin County, of course, Frisco, Plano, et cetera, north part of Plano.
Interesting. And so how are y'all, how do y'all monetize paper? You mentioned y'all were a 501c3, so that's, is that common in newspaper
media? It's more common, like the Fort Worth Report over there, which was kind of, that was, you know, some folks in city leadership's efforts to do something similar to what Monty did over here. You know, they didn't feel like they were getting a fair shake, you know, from the Four Star Telegram, which has not been Texas owned for a long time. That's part of the reason. You just don't have influence over ownership because they're not living in your community, you know? And so, you know, they're nonprofit. There's a number of them. Yeah. They're
right.
Out there.
Huh. That's interesting. I didn't know that. So are you from Texas originally?
Yeah. I was born here in Dallas, and then my family moved to Tarrant County when I was about 5 years old. And I grew up there and went to TCU, and now I'm back.
Go okay. Frogs, me too.
Yeah, nice. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
So what's your thoughts?
I got one there now.
Oh, good.
What are your thoughts on Dallas, like where we are today and where we're headed? Are you bullish?
I'm totally optimistic.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, do you mean that about the region? Or about the city of Dallas? Because I think those are very different
things.
Agreed.
Well, that's a very fair point. Because, you know, I always explain to people that you know, this economic miracle, you know, maybe it's not a miracle. There's good reasons for it. But without the Park Cities, Dallas looks a lot different. And as you know, I think I saw you comment like during, or some of your comments during the Hero thing, like, you know, we had the hardest time convincing people that there was like a crime problem downtown. Everybody like wanted to deny it and had their head in the sand. And we were one of the first to report that AT&T was leaving. I actually got a cease and desist from them.
Oh, wow.
That I think I'm going to frame. But wow. Yeah, I mean, again, we have good sources. But yeah, I mean, I think, but even Dallas, there's work to do downtown, as everybody knows. But I always say, like, probably the best thing that's going to happen to Dallas is the situation that happened in New York with the mayor. You know, I mean, the financial community was already heading down here anyway. We had Goldman, we have Texas Stock Exchange, and we just got to find a way to.
I mean, I wrote about that the other day, that sometimes teams win because they have real good talent, or other times they win because the other team's bad.
Yeah.
Chicago has bad mayor. Yeah. They have more debt than we do.
Even worse crime problem.
Right. And union problem, like, you know, that Dallas has better fundamentals than some of these other places.
And geographically a good spot.
I saw geographically a good spot. I saw the other day, this is the top market for singles. Yeah. And you know, you got all these young people. I think one of the important things in Dallas, even in the city, that you got the talented young people that go away to, my daughter's at Wake Forest, or they go to Duke or Stanford, wherever they go, they want to come back. We're not losing those kids to Atlanta or to New York or wherever it is.
Yeah. I have 20-somethings in Uptown finance.
Yeah, yeah, right, yep.
And this might be a little bit of a misnomer because you got Uptown, Downtown next door to each other.
Yeah,
which it's,
that's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, like I think the vacancy rates of Uptown, Downtown together make more sense to talk about than like just downtown, because it's similar, but
different.
But yesterday,
crime is the differentiator.
I saw a stat that when AT&T leaves, we will have the highest vacancy rate of any downtown in the country. And I'm thinking Cleveland, Cincinnati, like all these northeastern Rust Belt cities that I just assumed Detroit had a lot of vacancy.
But there is crime downtown. I mean, master plan was downtown for more than 40 years. And we've moved, you know, we're out, you know, and a lot of that's driven by the opinions that of my employees, that that's just not where they prefer to be.
Yeah.
I don't think any of them felt overwhelmingly unsafe, but they didn't stay late and they don't go out like, you know, it's
like
just,
in Uptown.
Yeah, exactly.
I lived in Uptown for 2 years and I walked all over Uptown.
That's right.
I felt perfectly safe. And I mean, cross Woodall Rogers in.
Totally different.
Over time, I remember. So I remember getting out of school. My dad was on the council for the groundbreaking help me. I'm terrible now. The Rosewood stuff. And I remember thinking, this is a bad idea. You know, I'm a junior high kid. This is a terrible idea. This isn't going to work at all. It's a bad neighborhood. When I started driving in the 80s, I couldn't drive in what's now Uptown.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it was such a bad area.
Really?
And, my gosh.
Yeah, it was one of the worst.
Terrible.
Really? Yeah.
And, the only thing down there was the
Cruising Hotel. But Greenville was good.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
It went bad. Now it's good again.
If you think about things over time, you've just sort of flipped this. Downtown was good. That's where Texas OU, everything happened. And Uptown didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, so. You know, if you look over, you know, the 100-year period, maybe this is just kind of normal.
You would think with Uptown being such a success that it would bleed over into downtown. And you've got a great building with 18.
Well, it did with the Clyde Warren. That part of downtown that's on Clyde Warren did great.
The arts district is good.
And you would think that would, but that's my point. It's
that's
like
a Bob Folsom.
It's not so much of a highway barrier as it was. Now you have the park, and you would think that would bleed south. And
but then you go around that City Hall part, like the East Quarter, that never happened. Come all the way around to where City Hall is. That has been a bad area for 20-plus years.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the public library was effectively a homeless camp until fairly recently.
And it still is bad when it's cold. I mean, I think the library should go away and be replaced by a neighborhood library. That's what there are a lot of people live downtown, and they should rent some space, or maybe somebody give them some space in one of those buildings. They don't need to have a giant building like that. That's just not the right in my mind. And I think City Hall just, and it's a huge debate. I'm not a believer that it's an architectural marvel. I've spent I've spent a lot of time in that building for a non-employee.
It's weird.
Yeah, and
it's paid for.
It's paid for. Oh yeah, well that's true.
Well, it's paid for, and then up to a point.
There's a whole discussion about what it's going to cost to fix it.
Well, I had the Biz Now, DFW market kickoff, and I moderated the panel with Alan Shore and Rick Perdue and Ray Washburn.
Oh yeah.
And so this came up, and all three of them, they just think City Hall just really shouldn't exist the way it does, and like. They honestly think it should go away, totally.
Well,
the only thing holding that up is
the Mavericks.
If it wasn't Ian Pei, I don't think anybody would probably disagree with him.
It's about his fourth best building downtown. I mean, it's not like we don't have the Meyerson, what I call the old Greyhound building, whatever it's called today. I don't know that City Hall should be downtown. I mean, there's no particular reason. It's not that easy a place to get to. And soon we won't have DART, or that. So what are your thoughts on DART?
we talked about that recently. Imagine. So,
they're similar to mine, probably.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I actually, in my capacity as elected official in Tarrant County, spent a lot of time on the public transit system there, in particular Texrail when it was developed. And so I was very deep in the numbers. And in that case, I believe it's a similar use case in Dallas County in the suburbs. It's just an incredible amount of money in debt to service a very small number of people, relatively speaking. And our federal environmental study on that project in Fort Worth, which was from downtown to Grapevine, literally said that it's not going to take a single car off the road. I mean, I can tell you the statistics. It's vehicle hours traveled per hour, vehicle miles traveled. In fact, it said it would increase traffic at signaled intersections, and it has. And there are very few people that ride it. And the same is true in DART. And the problem is that when you're a member city and you, and in that case, by the way, it was sold as a transportation project, and it wasn't. It was a commercial development project. Every suburban town between downtown Fort Worth and Grapevine thought they're going to build a Mockingbird station.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the great irony is Mockingbird station's never been a good project. I mean, it's changed hands, gone back to Linder before. I mean, and it's not a destination. It never has been.
Those TOD developments, none of them have ever.
Not here. They do work in other places.
In other places, but not here.
That's exactly right. If people like, Texans like their cars. People want to be able to drive to Argyle for some reason,
DART has, I think the last time I looked at the numbers, it was around $6 billion of debt. Just debt service. And again, the ridership is just so low, relatively speaking, to the population. Now, are there use cases where, people, whether they're, retired people, elderly people, need transport? Yeah, but each one of those suburban communities that, is going to send it to their vote. By the way, I don't think it'll ever get there. It's a negotiation.
Everybody needs to admit it, that DART is, it's a
well,
total
the problem waste. Is, well, like when Dave Leininger was here, the problem is it's unfair. I think the lesson of DART was the non-member cities have benefited, Frisco and Arlington. And if you're in DART, you lose your penny. And I believe we need regional transit, but that means the whole region needs to pay for it, not 13 people carrying the load for everybody.
Yeah, so as opposed to being four old men who bitch, if I had $100 billion and I had the czarship of North Texas and I had absolute control, I think it would work. I think having something like entertainment and the Mavs and the Rangers and some other things to do in downtown with a vibrant rail system that went down there.
But that was a thesis in victory.
Yeah, my dad, when my dad.
It was the same thesis.
No, that's a great, and as a retail guy, what I've always seen is retail never works around stadiums. Because, I did Alamo Drafthouse and movies, and nobody ever is going to go to a movie. Like, we would get these developers that would call us and be like, hey, we've got a concert venue here, we're going to put this sports arena here, and we want to put your movie theater right in between. And I'm like, why would anyone want to go to a concert and then a movie, or a ball game and a movie? And by the way, if either one of those is going on, I'm not going to the movie because I'm not going to fight the traffic. So same thing with restaurants. You're going to get the bars, the sports bars. They're going to get a little bit of bump of sales when the game's on. But when it's not on, nobody's going to be going there, especially with the Cowboys. Like, You only have 8 games a year.
The problem
nobody
goes,
uses that area for retail.
Well, it's so hard to get it out of there, too.
I mean, Wrigley's the same way. Wrigley, you like, there's a couple bank branches near Wrigley that are the worst bank branches in their chains.
Yeah.
Because nobody does banking there. They use the ATMs to get some cash to go buy a hot dog, but that's it. Like,
not anymore.
It's just not good transactional retail being near a stadium.
Well, we miss this, and I don't know, this is sort of family lore. You know, my dad, I guess, ran the sports commission before he was elected to council in 65, still the youngest person elected. But he believed that Dallas should have the Cowboys or the football teams. At one time, we had 2 of them. They need to build a football stadium and a baseball stadium and farmers market, you know, and he was one of the first people and represented the city of Dallas on getting the Rangers to come regionally here. Had we decided, and as great a mayor as Eric Johnson was, and he was, he was not interested in sports and he didn't care at all that the Cowboys left to go to Irving. So part of the problem is that we're trying to solve problems that happened a long time ago that you can't fix. I mean, you know, that once they're gone, they are kind of gone. That's kind of part of the problem here. If the Mavericks leave, we shouldn't think that they're going to come
back. But I mean, it's a good argument to have, like you just said, we have not only the Mavericks, but we have the Stars. They're both high frequency sports. With somewhat different fan bases. Yep. They play alternate times during the week. There's concerts in between that. And it hadn't done shit for Victory. It really hasn't. And
it's good office. I think the office stuff does fine down there. But I wouldn't office there because on game nights, I got to be out of there.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep. And so I don't know that, like, everybody always talks. Like, I sometimes feel the pressure to not say the thing everybody. I'm the contrarian. Like, I don't know that a big-ass arena, especially a football one, because there's not enough games. There's not enough reasons. When there's not a game, it's just a massive parking lot.
Well, to your point, so I have a unique perspective because I've lived in both Fort Worth and Dallas for an extended period of time. And like Fort Worth is having a tremendous amount of success with their entertainment districts.
Yeah.
They don't have a professional sports team.
Yeah.
Well, they got TCU.
I agree. Dickey's Arena is one of my favorite places to go.
We'll stay at
the Bowie House. It's awesome.
No,
we can walk
that's
there.
What I'm saying, though. Like, you know, actually, yeah. like one of the things I've observed in the last 2.5 years of being here in Dallas from Fort Worth is, like, Dallas used to be such a great live music scene.
Yeah.
And it's not even close to Fort Worth at this point. You know, Fort Worth's kind of become like the new Austin in that respect. That's an area I think you can work on.
Fort Worth also tries politically to work together better.
They do.
And Dallas is
– don't get me started.
Dallas is 14 mayors and one guy that runs the meeting. Not now, really. It's feudalism.
It's structurally dysfunctional.
And people in Fort Worth, there's an ethos in Fort Worth around making the city better. The same way there's this magic of you might have gone to Iowa State or Duke or wherever it is, but you got purple in your closet. People have really rallied around TCU there in an amazing way that we lack.
And the interesting side of that, you're exactly right. Like the Dickies Arena has done so well with that entertainment because it's more of a niche that you're catering to things.
Not too big.
You're not a category.
It's a perfect concert arena.
It's a perfect like,
it, it was
it's
made for sound.
But
I'm going to 2 this next month, actually.
I'm guilty of the reason.
A lot of different uses.
Yeah.
I'm the reason that, like, West 7th and down here south of downtown over in Deep Ellum, like, I put in several bars down there in both of those, and they went from kind of a cool, like, it's the weird
thing. West 7th is definitely the exception to what I was...
Well, it's both, and it's both tenants are the same tenant, and it's like, when you get too much of a critical mass of that element, like, a couple, you need the mixed use to balance it.
Mm-hmm.
You need the office, you need the multifamily, you need a couple bars, more restaurants, not...
Well, it just becomes concentrated bars.
Not
is your
so
point.
Much liquor forward,
yeah.
because then all of a sudden, like, overnight, it flips to not good.
I used to love to come to Deep Ellum, you know,
in the
college. 80s. I was going to say high school, but I don't think I can... But, you know, I like bands, right? And so, like, it had that edgy feeling. You felt like you're doing something a little dangerous, but it wasn't, like, now.
No,
it is
just
dangerous.
Yeah.
Is Deep Ellum dangerous now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not good. I mean, to the point that the city started
regulating
closing times and closing
bars.
It
did, and then you hit a tipping point of these bottle service bars and all this stuff that was bringing in all kinds of element that just turned it over.
But things like that, things like what we just talked about in Fort Worth, right? Those are opportunities for downtown Dallas. But, you know, in selfishly, maybe pivoting back to like what we were all about, you know, there was a real purpose, you know, behind it. And the real purpose behind it was to tell some of these stories that we knew were going on from a different point of view, because it's about improving Dallas.
Yeah.
And we believe that, you know, addressing the crime problem more effectively is critical to that. We believe that solving homelessness, or at least addressing homelessness in a different way, in a productive, caring way, is a big part of that. And we believe improving schools is part of that. And the problem is, like, when you have a town that's, you know, and I'm talking about the city of Dallas proper now, right? When you have a town that's 60-40 in favor of one political party or the other, and that's the same political party that's created a lot of these problems in the big cities, the other's perspective doesn't often get even shared.
Well, it's
and there's value in hearing from everybody, you know?
It'd be amazing to get back to a society that all wanted, you know, wanted to reach the same goal, maybe different ways to get there, but wanted to work together to get to that point. And we're
It'd
just
be
such
nice
a polarized.
Dallas would elect judges that are the best judges and not.
That's a big problem too.
Politicians.
Yeah, it's just we're polarized now, and maybe it's just time. We're in a big demographic shift.
When did crime become a political issue? Yeah. Right, and like
exactly.
I was doing a WBAP remote in downtown.
When did fraud become a political issue?
No kidding.
These people are taking billions and billions of dollars away from everyone else, and you're supporting them. And we're the bigots for saying, wait, time out. They stole money. I don't care what color you are. If you steal money.
Well, the amazing thing is if you could just fix the fraud problem and give that money to American citizens that need that help, there'd be a big, that'd be a massive change.
Yeah,
that's true for all these governmental systems. Yeah. If you eliminate the fraud or find a way to eliminate most of the fraud, you know, we would have a lot less problems economically.
100%.
I mean, we'd have conversations about whether or not Social Security ever gets cut.
I'd love for them to figure out what percentage of our national debt is fraud.
It's a lot.
I guarantee. Well, the way these billions keep popping up in every one of these places they uncover, it's going to, those bees turn
to
teeth.
I'm still waiting on my ERC checks, and I met all the rules. I know I'm not playing the game right.
No.
I want to go back to something Dallas said, though, because it was really important, actually. Oh, you know,
that's a first on the show. Let's make sure we mark that.
Short clip on that one.
Yeah. Mark at 41:53. Dallas is smart.
No, because working around this thesis that like it should be about like improving the city, right? In those areas, which brings everybody up, right? Core services, let's call them. And so we're sitting in downtown having this, and the host is looking around. He's like, "Why is this so much different than downtown Dallas?" And it's because of what Dallas said, because the city, the local government is just far less dysfunctional. Even if people of different political parties find a way to cooperate as much as they can, they try to focus on the problem that they're solving and not the personalities. In fact, when the personalities do start to get a lot of hand, that's when they kind of get reeled back in a little bit. And then you have a lot of families in that town, wealthier families like the Basses, the Moncriefs, there's many of them, that really invest in the town.
Is their city structure... Also, do they have at-large seats?
No, they're like my districts, but they have it.
It's smaller.
It's okay. And there's a spirit about it that they all, and they work together, and they don't have as much like rivalry with the councilmen. I don't talk to this person. I mean, there's less jockeying. I'll tell a story I like to tell. The late Dr. Maxine Thornton Reese, when I one time came in, this would have been in the early 2000s. I was the vice chair of the library board. Rodney Schlosser, who later was on the DART board, was the chair at the time. And she came in, and there was a big controversy about what we're going to name a library. That's what she came, but she let the library board know, if you live in District 4, you can still check out a book in District 11. Now, everyone knows that in the whole city, but that is always stuck with me as a microcosm of the council members are so fixated on, I only care about one side of the street. Or sometimes you'll have where you have a four-corner retail intersection and it's divided between two or four council members. They only care about their corner.
Oh,
we
that's
have
the worst.
To move out of my district. When people start saying my anything instead of we or our, there's a cultural problem.
You're starting that conversation off in the
Other problem with the system that Dallas has today is What that does is, because they're all pitted against each other, it just strengthens the bureaucracy and the staff.
Right.
Yeah. And so they don't always make the best decisions. And now you got the tail wagging the dog. Instead of the elected officials managing city personnel, it's they're kind of just reacting to what city personnel.
And most of them don't live in Dallas.
And we're doing a story on that right now, actually.
Yeah. Well, then you had social media in the mix. And so they have a meeting. Maybe it went well. Then somebody goes out and posts some clip on their thing like, oh, I'm the city councilman for so far, and I did this. And then the other three, they're pissed off. And then so it just seems like anytime they make progress, somebody says something stupid and they're all mad at each other.
Mayor Leppard acknowledged that to me in the context of a Dallas Hero Forum. And he was great about participating in all that. And because he was talking about, you know, how things were when he was mayor. I'm like, but mayor, this is not your city council. You know, and then things do not work the same way that, you know, particularly law enforcement size as they did back then, and it's the structure. I say you have a structural problem. It doesn't even necessarily have to be a strong mayor versus a strong city manager, but you know, I do believe if you took half those seats, maybe got rid of half of the half, and then made the rest at large, it would definitely help.
Well, that's my dad always said that he was first elected and they had at larges, and you need to have, and Irving has this. I think when I go see, that you have people looking out for the district, but you also have people looking out for the benefit of.
I couldn't agree more.
The city. Yeah. You know, there were times in the past where we've had a zoning case maybe, and you had a forward thinking, big thinking person that will say, hey, I'm going to have to oppose this, but I've made sure everybody, I'm going to get defeated in my own district.
Yeah.
That's how ludicrous Dallas is that, you know, look the last time I can remember somebody taking a position on a really important regional issue was Bill Blades from Lake Highlands.
Yeah.
The great Bill Blades is the one that got the inland port done, you know, and now I want to write about this. You can't get any industrial or truck-based stuff done in Southern Dallas because they don't want trucks.
Yeah,
well, that's like saying it. I know. That's like saying at DFW, oh, sorry, that's too many airplanes.
Yeah. I mean, Bill was actually the one that was getting the apartments torn down.
He was. No,
and we had some dilapidated. I mean, that's
Bill cared about the entire city.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to do that and make these changes, then you have to get politicians to agree to relinquish power.
We need fewer politicians.
Right,
but to need pass more those community. Laws. Local politics should be about making the area better.
Oh, I agree.
You know, you don't see this in high-functioning suburbs like UP, HP, Frisco, maybe they're less now. But we should have more people that are donating their time and they care about volunteering and doing their best instead of practicing politics.
But they have to cede their own power. They have to change those governments, which is a problem.
You know,
that's like trying to get Congress to give themselves a pay cut.
You've got people, this is their best they've ever made at $60,000 holding office. Mm. And they hold it hard. They want that job. And they see that I'm going to take a lot of pictures and post them on social media rather than actually providing leadership and moving the city forward.
To your question, you can change to the kind of system that Dallas described tomorrow or next election cycle. That's what Dallas Hero is.
Yeah, but who has to do it?
It's a big effort. You got to get a lot of volunteers to collect signatures. There's a lot of legal work that has to be done to make sure things are written away that they'll stand up. The city will fight you on certain things. But, it's been proven it can be done. I mean, it was done.
And all the satisfaction studies every year say people think, I'm not getting value for my tax dollars. I don't think Dallas is a safe place. That's a problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah, that's
neither of those are political issues.
That's my point.
It shouldn't be.
That's my point. Yeah.
It shouldn't be.
Look, at the end of the day, people, doesn't matter what political party you are, what race you are, religion, gender, whatever. Like, you want to feel safe in your home, in your neighborhood, in your town. Like,
shouldn't be a debate on that.
It's kind of that simple, you know?
Maybe we should do some polls on what do we agree on?
Yeah.
And do you want to feel safe? Yes or no?
Well, that was Hero again. The establishment media and politicians of Dallas violently opposed it.
No, I don't want to feel safe.
Yeah.
Danger.
We're out of time.
We could have gone all day.
We could have. Yeah. Well, you heard it here. Dallas is a two-paper town now. This has been a great conversation. Chris, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fantastic. I don't get to do this much.
Absolutely. Subscribe to the Dallas Express. Subscribe to the Dallas Morning News. There's enough readers for both. And we appreciate you being on, and we'll see you next time.